Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 184 for March 9th, 2010.
It's a little meaty.
MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits. So do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/MacBreak. It's time for that MacBreak Weekly Magic, the thing that happens every Tuesday right here on the TWiT Network, where we talk about all things Apple, starting off in the left corner, Mr. Alex Lindsay of thepixelcore.com. Hey, Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great.
We can all do this show like this.
We're going to do the whole show like this. It's going to be fantastic.
Also with us right now, Mr. Merlin Mann. Hey, Merlin.
Muffin Mann is seated at the table in the laboratory of his utility muffin lab.
Oh, dear.
I'm doing great, Leo. It's great to be here, and Skype is working great.
Yeah, we love Skype. Skype's really kind of the empowering technology that makes it all possible.
And the person who loves it the most is actually Andy Notko.
Let's say hi to Andy over there in Boston.
From high atop the Melody Ballroom in Casinoville, Nevada, it's the Pepperzent Radio Show, starring Bobby Masterson, Bill Murray, Fawley Falsesson, and of course he'll bring his Nash County Ramblers. And now here's our...
I love that. I love it.
You see, you was going 70s. I was going 30s and 40s.
I like it. You know, we're jumping all over the place. We got a little time machine here going on the show. Hey, big story. Big story.
Big story.
Steam is
coming to the Mac.
And any of you gamers, you're kind of a casual gamer.
I only played Plants and Zombies. But I had to actually go find out what Steam was because it's a real PC thing. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It's much more of a, so I didn't really know what it was. I was like, what is this?
Awesome.
I better know this before the show starts. But it's, so really you're able to
It's really changed PC gaming entirely. I mean, it's completely reinvented PC gaming. You create a Steam account.
Right.
I think it kind of came off of the MMORPG kind of things or the online gaming thing. But they said, wait a minute, what we'll do is we'll create a server. Valve owns it. We'll put our games on it, but you don't even have to own the games. You can buy the games online. You can download them from us. Steam does some really amazing marketing stuff. You know, you'll get a weekend deal on a game for $10.
Right.
It is really transformed PC gaming. And of course, PC gaming is on Windows only, and Mac people, I think we've kind of felt left out, but...
I think that had a lot to do with Mac people being more productive.
Forget it, because...
Angry, cranky,
forget it, because your productivity has just ended, ladies and gentlemen.
I saw that it had Civilizations, which is... I had a friend that I was staying at his house, and he had Civilizations, and I stayed up... The reason I don't play a lot of games is not because I don't like them. It's because I like them too much.
Yeah.
And so Civilizations is on here, I guess, and it's really addicting.
Andy, are you a gamer? I can't remember if you...
Not really. I'm in that category of, I mean, kind of like Alex, where it's like, I make my living spending many, many hours a day doing this. And if I spent more those hours a day doing this instead, it would have a dual-pronged negative effect, which is that there would be less hours I spend actually doing my job. And also, eventually, I would need a helper monkey to do my keyboarding for me, and I'd like that to not happen.
Right.
So, but yeah, I'm more of like an iPhone gamer and a PSP gamer.
I think we've all become that way with age, maybe. Merlin, you're Mr. Productivity. You probably don't.
Why am I Mr. Productivity? Because I'm totally distractible. I don't play a lot of these really absorbing games. I played The Legend of Zelda once, and I made a horse gallop in a circle for half an hour while my wife yelled at me. I popped into the Wii and went tick-a-ta, 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 tick-a-ta for 30 minutes. And she's like, do it, hit the thing. Quit doing that.
Madeline's a gamer.
No, not really.
But she knew that you were supposed to hit the thing.
Well, is this? Let me ask you this. So this is the kind of game. Does this game benefit from that kind of network effect, where like when more people?
Oh well, Prince of Persia was a good example. It was it was a network game, but all games now, very few games are single player only.
Will this improve the gameplay for people to have Mac folks coming in? Does it change it for the folks who are already playing it?
What Steam says is they're going to start with Portal 2. Portal's that great orange box thing that our friend Jonathan Colton wrote the song Still Alive for. And what a great game that is. It's really fun. But it's a puzzle game. It's the kind of game you guys would actually like. You know, it's more of a puzzle game than a shooter, than a quick twitch shooter. But Valve also does, you know, Counter-Strike, Half-Life 2, and a lot of those games are going to be on the Mac. And what they say is they're going to start doing – this is, you know, what's happened is that PC gaming has been struggling. Yeah. Most of these companies have been doing console versions, simultaneous releases of console versions. That's really where they make their money. And I think they see once they've got that kind of pipeline going of multi-platform development, now they can say, well, we'll just add the Mac. It's like we're doing an Xbox 360, a PS3, a Windows, and Mac version, and we'll release them all simultaneously. Well,
and a lot of times what they're doing is they're using a coding environment, like a coding shell. So it's,
yeah, once you do, you know, once they, you kind of start they build, going
they,
for that.
They still do all their programming, and it all sits inside of something that's been abstracted from the Xcode. So the Xcode just holds it there, and then everything exists inside of that. I don't know if that's how they're doing it, but that's how the easiest way for them to port from platform to platform is not try to interact with the platform very much. Right. And a lot of these multiplayer games are not, you know, they're not... A lot of the games that I saw that they were showing are not massive, you know, need every CPU cycle.
Portal, no, but Left 4 Dead, which will be the other title that will come out, is a pretty good Twitch gaming game. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. This will be in April. It says, Steam's director of development said, we are treating the Mac as a tier one platform. So all, this is such good news for Macintosh users and, you know, and for Apple in general.
Yeah.
So all of our future games will release simultaneously on Windows, Mac, and Xbox 360. That's huge.
Just think of playing Civilizations on an iPad. That I really can't ever install that. That's all I got to say.
Oh yeah. You know,
I see myself on that train going through four or five stations past my house.
Yeah. Where am I?
Yeah.
Where am I?
Looking up. I'm in Connecticut.
I thought I was in the 13th century.
I'm invading.
Yeah. So what's also cool is Mac and Windows players will be in the same universe, so that the servers will be the same. The lobbies will be the same. So
this took a lot of time. This took a lot of work for them to get it done. And they said they got a lot of support from Apple to get it done. I mean,
they'd have to. It shows that OpenCL and OpenGL platforms on the Mac have parity. The Mac hardware is up there that they can play these games. And by the way, PC customers who've already purchased a game for the PC, which includes me, I buy a lot of, you know, PC, for the most part, PC gamers now, it's Steam. And I buy most of my, if it's not on Steam, but it almost always is.
So it's a platform. It's not just a game. It's a platform.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Okay.
It's a lifestyle.
It's a hat.
Steam has a wonderful plan for your life, Merlin. Give yourself to it willingly.
You run your Steam client, you log into your Steam. It'll show you what games you have installed. Now, you still install them to your desktop. I mean, you're not playing the game online, you're playing it on your desktop, but it connects through the Steam servers. So if you buy a game, you download it, and it's big, just like it could be gigabytes, just like it's on a DVD. But the games are cheaper. If you have it, I love this. If you buy it on one machine and then you log in on another machine, you can say, I'm going to download those same games. And they're going to do that with PC customers. You'll get the Mac version of the game as well.
So you have to have a connection so it can check. You know,
well, this was a big story, actually. Assassin's Creed 2, Ubisoft put this crappy DRM in it that required you, even if you're playing a single person, Steam, I guess you could play it single person. I did Bioshock that way, but most games now, it's the online play that's critical. Anyway, Assassin's Creed 2, which has both online and a single player campaign, you couldn't play unless you were online. Right. So you had to get online to verify the DRM, and their servers went down this weekend. So people had the game and couldn't play it.
I bet you that didn't go very well.
Did not go over well. And the irony is that the DRM, which was much loathed, was cracked within 24 hours anyway, so the pirates can continue to play. Just the legitimate users.
Exactly.
There's a point there somewhere.
Yeah.
Not that we want to make it.
We did, I think.
My friend Chris Coldren used to have this great line, my friend back in college, and he would always say, a quote from his dad, he'd say, the main thing you got to do is you got to keep the honest people honest. You know, it's like latching the screen door. It's not, it's going to keep the cats and the and the drifter's out. But it's not going to stop somebody who really wants to get in your house. And you're never really going to stop somebody who really, really, really wants to get in your house. And all you're going to do is really inconvenience your family trying to get in and out. You know,
the difference is that you incent honest people to become thieves when you do this kind of thing. And that's the real problem is that...
Totally.
You know, so let's say you have Assassin's Creed 2. You can't play it. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to go look for the crack so that I can play it.
Like, what if I lock myself out of the house? What am I going to do? I'm going to kick the door open. Well, I guess maybe that's just me.
Well, also, I mean, like,
I think we've all learned something today. Mainly, don't lock the door.
You went from the Starsky and Hutch school of locksmithing, obviously.
Yes. Anyway, I think that one of the things that's held Mac adoption back considerably is the lack of good games on the Mac platform. I mean, that whenever anybody asked me, should I buy a Mac, I would always say yes, unless you're a gamer.
Yeah.
Now we don't have to say that anymore. I think that this is parody.
Go ahead, Andy. Sorry.
No, that's it.
Oh. There's something that this is kind of related to something, you know, we've mentioned in the advertising thing with when we're talking about advertising, about how advertisers want to go after people, you know, that don't buy their product, not people who already have it by and large. And it's interesting. I think one thing that from a consumer standpoint, we're always surprised when we hear something like this and we go, oh, gosh, that's really crazy. We didn't think that was possible. But, you know, the name of the game in corporate America is growth. I mean, whether you want to grow or not, you've got to grow, especially if you're a public company. And, you know, I think that's such an interesting thing about the Mac now, is now that the technology is caught up, now that there's enough of a base to make it interesting, we're going to see all kinds of things where this is going to be where the growth is. And, you know, and as a company, I think a smart company tends to look not at the thing that's just profitable right now. You know, this is why it's so interesting to compare Apple to Microsoft in terms of growth rather than in terms of just straight dollars. Because the trend lines are really interesting when you look at growth rather than just straight dollars. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I also think that as you look at communities and systems that are like Steam, when you start adding the efficiencies that those allow of having people who are, you know, you have the entire community of people who are willing to pay for it and people, you can start lowering the cost. Because a lot of what we pay for is piracy, the inefficiency, shipping, you know, advertising. As we get more and more people in that community, a company can become more efficient if they want to by making it less expensive and thereby lowering the incentive to pirate it. Because, you know, that's what they're kind of overcoming by the price. If it was efficient, if everyone who would pay something for it, they could make it a lot less, you know, cost a lot less if they were thinking kind of long term and not short term as far as their quarterly, you know, reports. Sorry.
Yep.
File that one under "Don't get me started."
Don't get me started. So I'm just
Let's
checking.
Let's figure out how to make my stuff harder to get.
I'm just checking the $91,000 Oscar gift bag.
$91,000.
Well, part of it is because there's like a $85,000 African safari with a personal chef in it, a $14,500 stay in Monaco.
Is it the same personal chef, Leo, or will they have to? I mean, he'll be doing a lot of traveling.
You have to share it with Jennifer Aniston, apparently. No, anybody who goes to it, like presenters, losers, not obviously everybody in the audience, but everybody who goes up on stage, I guess, probably
gets one. That makes sense.
And here's an interesting prize: a $7,000 trip to Connecticut.
Ooh. That's the one by
you know,
New York?
No one asked me.
That's the one by New York,
I would have bundled
yes.
our software in there. I would have said, you know, here, I'll DB Matt.
Well, the reason I'm looking is because usually there is an Apple product or two in there. Let's see. Gift cards for online shopping, gourmet chocolate, indoor skydiving experience, and fitness classes. What a lot of crap. Free Altoids.
also known as Brian Austin Green's personal assistant gift bag.
Yeah,
I know one person who like works for somebody who is like kind of a high profile holiday person who gets these gift bags, and he always every time he reads something like that on Gawker, he's like, okay, I wonder if this Christmas I'll be getting the body bath gel or the set of $80 oven mitts or the I bet I'm not going to get the African Safari or the iPhone.
We like to call it trickle down economics.
Yeah,
so it's a re-gift bag.
Re-gift bag. Well, here's what you might be getting: electronic cigarettes. I think that's we'll give those to Andy.
Yeah. They're better because they're digital.
They're digital.
Your fingers.
Red eye removal surgery worth $8,800. I think we have cameras that do that now.
There's a plug-in for that, I think.
I think so, yeah. Premium gaming apparel.
Oh, you're just making these up.
No, man. I'm not. I wish I were. This is from the DailyBeast.com.
Okay, so I just want to be clear. There's two axes here that I want to explore. First of all, there's clothes you wear to play a game, and then you can buy nice ones.
This is clothes to wear.
Premium gaming apparel.
They're very comfortable. Nice ones. Hey, if you're going to play for 16 hours straight without going to the bathroom, there is some gear that you need. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, sure, you want the catheter suit. I understand that. You can sit in your video game chair with your catheter suit.
We don't like
suit
to call it the catheter suit. We like to call it the necessary equipment.
I think there was a little upset because at the Golden Globe Awards, they handed out pigs, micro pigs, small, really small pigs, but you had to attend an hour-long seminar on how to care for the pig.
Yeah.
Wow. But I don't see iPods. You know, traditionally, the iPod was a very popular item. There's a flip cam. I don't see any Apple stuff.
I think what you should try to do, Leo, is like get those like a twit like window vinyl clings.
There you go.
Try to
get those. See if I can get those in.
So that you say the $30,000 cruise, the $80,000 diamond studded wristwatch. Oh, and some sort of twit logo cling, Wingo cling.
Yeah.
If that winds up on Eon Line, that's good publicity, sir. That's $18 well spent for the whole
thing. Yeah, I think so. Unless it's a regift.
Spend money to make money.
April 3rd, that, you know, they should have put iPads in there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been a great
certificate?
Well, maybe they don't have any.
That would have gotten me a little bit upset.
Now, why, Andy? Are you waiting for your iPad?
It's not April 3rd, so yes, I'm waiting for my iPad.
You're not going to get an early edition? Hint, hint.
I don't know.
You couldn't tell us.
If I did, then I'd be like polishing my Charles Nelson Riley. But I can tell you definitively that I do not have an iPad, okay, and that I do not know if I will be getting one early.
Do you know if anybody has one? Does Walt or David or Wally or Fred or
don't answer Andy, don't answer, he's trying to trick
you. David usually takes his kids out to play dates on Tuesdays from 2 to 8. I was there in his house last week, and he's a little bit behind on his Netflix returns. There's a brie in the fridge that's starting to go a little bit gamey. I did not see any evidence of an iPad.
Oh dear,
you can't get a better source than a David Pogue stalker.
Yeah. You know, Steve was at the Oscars.
Did he have an iPad keeping track of it?
I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, he's he really was there.
He's not wearing a funny hat.
Well, he's sweat. You know, the funny thing is he's got a turtleneck on under there. He's wearing a dinner jacket.
It's a nice dinner jacket. Fits beautifully. He actually looks pretty good.
Looks fantastic.
And he's got the security goons right there next to him. Or maybe that's an Israeli producer. It could be either. I don't know which.
Yes, most Israeli producers are ex-Mossad.
I think it's definitely Mossad. Whoever it is
like
Mossad.
It's part of the producers guild over there. You have to, you know.
Don't mess with the Mossad.
Here's a knife and three toothpicks. How many border guards can you take out?
He actually looks pretty good. He was at Pixar, and so he was nominated.
Wasn't that a little bit of a surprise, though? Doesn't he, not want to go out for these sort of things because, you know, I always got the impression that he only will do an event where there's going to be lots of photographers and lots of publicity if he can promote Apple's businesses there.
Or it could
just simply be a case of he just wants to support the film and support the people who work for him.
But think about it now. What is Steve's big push right now? Where has he been lately? Wall Street Journal, New York Times. He's pushing content.
Movies. He's got to start mixing. He's got to have to start actually talking.
I think this has something to do. You know, so you're absolutely right that Steve is very focused on his business.
And this is his business right now.
That's what I
mean.
I'm
he owns 7% of Disney.
Yeah. Jeez. But I don't think he's there as a mogul or to hobnob. I think I think you're exactly right. I think he's trying to.
Well, the truth is, I mean, like, you know, not to be too meta about this, but just showing up at the Oscars, you know, of course, we got a new TiVo so we could record the Oscars. We have watched the whole thing, the red carpet, the whole nine.
The coverage is
insane.
I love it. I'm sorry. I know it's trashy.
But it's, saying it's good publicity, too. It is. I mean, I know he doesn't need the publicity, but, you know, as he moves closer and closer into the, if you like, kind of consumer mainstream, you know, just showing up there, you know, and also, I mean, in fairness, he does have that other company that he works with. So it is respectful.
It did win Best Animated Film.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was nominated in the Best Picture film as well.
Yeah.
First time, I think, in a while.
Knowing how people at Pixar, I've done a lot of talks at a lot of places, and there's four or five that really stick out in my mind in terms of the employees that I met. But by an order of magnitude, Pixar is like wall to wall with incredibly intense people who care deeply about doing great work. I've never met anybody on the level of even whatever you do at Pixar, whether you're like cleaning up trays, everybody there is completely engaged. And I wonder if it would kind of also send kind of a bad message. You know what I mean? In a place, at a place that really where people care that much, if the head dude wasn't there to celebrate on their behalf, you know?
Yeah, maybe. But I wonder if he's been there in the past. I mean, they've been nominated many times. You know, John Lasseter was featured. They did...
In the best short subject, there was like a little mini documentary package in which established directors talked about the importance of short films, and John Lasseter was part of that package.
Yeah, it was really neat. It was really nicely done, I thought.
You see, I think of the shorts and documentaries, I think 9 out of 10 were using Final Cut.
9 out of 10 used Final Cut. What was the 10th?
Sure, I mean, it was Avid.
Who doesn't use, I mean, you think Avid?
Oh, yeah,
scissors.
Yeah, right. Glue.
Tape. I lost my tape.
So, what's that thing called, Alex? The big thing, the Hamburger Meister? What's it called? The giant machine they used to edit films with?
That's before my time.
Yeah.
No, when my pals were in film school, they had to go to the giant machine. Yeah. The giant machine for editing film.
In my time, it was all audio since I was in a radio station, so it was a lot of whoa, to find the beat, but that was about all I had to worry about.
Credit to Jim Dalrymple at CNET. He went and actually talked to a lot of these filmmakers. He talked to Matthew O'Neill, director of China's Unnatural Disaster, The Tears of Sichuan Province, one of the nominated pictures. He says, O'Neill says, we switched over entirely to Final Cut Pro and forced any holdout editors to switch too because it made more sense economically and allowed us to do everything we need.
You know, one of the things that Final Cut did early on that I think that Apple did early on with Final Cut is that they didn't restrict what resolution you could work at for a certain price. And I think this was where it really, Avid kind of didn't make the switch fast enough, and they still really haven't made it to the where they need it. With a Final Cut, you can have uncompressed 444, you know, HD for $1,300 plus the machine. Right. With an Avid, it's a $250,000 Nitro system. I don't know if it is now, but it used to be this huge expensive thing just to be able to edit HD. And HD came on too quickly, and Avid didn't react. And right. Apple, that really caused a massive expansion. And then, of course, the real, when Cold Mountain was edited by Walter Murch,
yeah.
That was the beginning of the end, because suddenly all these editors were like, ooh, he's using... what is he using over there? And that gave it some legitimacy that it didn't have before. And then it's just a matter of the economics just make way more sense.
Dan Wilkin, the online editor of Food Incorporated, said, Final Cut Pro can do almost everything the million-dollar systems can do, and it costs you below $15,000, including the cost of the Mac, Final Cut, and video cards. Truth is, for several projects I've worked on, we could do everything with the same gear you use at home.
Yeah.
That's significant. I mean, that's huge.
I mean, that's what's happening across the board.
But by the way, Final Cut Pro, not quite 50% market share in the nonlinear editing space. Better than Avid.
Well, and Avid's more expensive. Yep. Avid will say that they're not trying to get to the same number of people. What they want is they still really cater. And to be fair to Avid, I still don't think Final Cut handles large numbers of what we call objects very well. So you tend to break up a large Final Cut project, you'll break it up into reels. Because with an Avid, we had...
You could do the whole movie in one project.
And all the extra takes. I mean, there was a movie that I worked on that had 750,000 objects in one project. I would hesitate to put more than 10,000 into a Final Cut project, one Final Cut project. And so, now, admittedly, the Avid wasn't built for the 750,000, and it actually crashed once a day. But it was. But 150,000 is pretty 150,000 is what it's really spec'd for. And Final Cut, you really can't do that. So you really have to think about breaking the movie up into scenes and into reels and so on and so forth, so that you in the smaller sections in Final Cut, in my opinion, to efficiently work. Someone may know more than I do, but we have found that we put that much in, things get real heavy.
We're going to take a break in just a bit. We'll talk a little bit about the first iPad commercial, which also happened to be on the Oscars, in just a second. Before we go much farther, though, I do want to mention our friends at Citrix, the makers of GoToMeeting, that great online meeting software that makes it so easy for you to avoid business travel and yet get more done. I bet you a lot of movies are done with GoToMeeting. I mean, what a great way to collaborate, to work together for product demos and sales presentations, too, for training. Any kind of conference call is more visual, more effective, and more affordable because you don't have to do that expensive business travel. My first go-to meeting was up and running in minutes. Of course, I dimly remember that because I've been using it for so long. You can try it right now. You could see how fast you can get it running. Before we're done, I'm sure you'll have it. It takes a minute. Go to gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. By the way, this is free for 30 days. If you decide to buy after your 30-day trial, $49 a month for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want, and that includes free teleconferencing, both phone and voice over internet. Free. gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. I love it. I know you're going to love it, and I think you'll think of a lot of ways to use it, so give it a try. gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. So finally, ads for the iPad.
Coming.
Anything to say about that? You want to see it?
Let's see them. Let's take a look.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go to the video. There were two of them, right? This is the first one. It's on YouTube. Let me get the high resolution version. So they're showing the bookstore. They're showing the film. They're showing the Google Maps. There's a reader. I mean, it's really going very quickly. It's only 30 seconds. And I think the point of it, the thing that I get from it, is that it's more about, look at all the things it can do.
Yeah, I think it really looks like they're not trying to sell this as an ebook reader or as a content device. They're trying to plant that seed that this could be your next laptop. And
that's interesting.
I think so. I mean, also, I was anonymously invited to take part in a survey about Apple products. It was like an email survey. You know, as someone who has registered an iMac, would you like to take part in a survey? And of course, right. You know, it's an alternative to actually having to sit down and write things. And anytime you're given a survey to do, you know that the first third of the questions don't mean anything. The last third of the questions almost don't mean anything. They're usually just trying to figure out who is giving us the answers to those questions that we really want. And the important ones are always sandwiched in the middle. And there was a set of questions that's all about attitudes about the iPad, about do you see this as a business tool? Have you spent this much money on business things? How many people are running in your business? When's the last time you traveled, and did you take what sort of stuff did you take? There seemed to be a real focus on not how interested am I in the iPad as a movie viewer and as a music player and as a game machine, and how interested am I in something that could compete with a $500 Windows notebook?
Right. Huh, that's interesting, because that's not the space I'd want to compete in, especially with now Microsoft and the Courier looking more real. That's the two-screen booklet thing, and then HP's got a Slate. I mean, there's a lot of companies going after in that computer space.
Well, we should talk about all three of those, because those are interesting, very interesting demos. Courier is still just a flash animation of something that may or may not really exist. I thought that was one of the oddest demo videos I've ever seen, because, you know, I am the biggest nerd ever. I will see that potential in just about anything, because if it's new and interesting and has a different approach. But even the whole demo was about, I'm an interior designer. I've just got this new contract. It will be the focus of my life for the next 3 months. So I'm going to create a new notebook. This fabric looks okay. I think I'll take a copy of that for my notebook journal. And it was great if you were in the business of being an interior designer. It didn't communicate the idea that anybody who uses handheld digital devices can find a use for this thing, which is exactly what the point of the iPad video was. They're not there to tell you, they weren't showing you a single use construct. They're trying to give you enough imagery and enough information to make you think that no matter what it is that you do, you will be able to find a use for the iPad in your life.
I think that the big thing for the iPad is a laptop for people who don't want or need the complexity of an operating system. And I don't think that
these are just Windows 7s, kind of, right?
I know, but that's the issue.
I take it back. Courier is not. Courier is the Zune OS. Courier is Windows Phone 7 on a different, kind of hardware platform.
It looks like it's based on the Zune operating system, I believe, is based on Windows CE, as a matter of fact, but with just a lot of really cool things added onto it.
Slick
and a lot
UI.
Of really great hardware,
yeah.
Right, that makes it work. And last week, I think we talked a lot about how really cool the new Windows Phone operating system looks like. I'm giving them 10 points out of 10 for going a different way. I think the Courier could be a really cool tool if they had the guts to commit to the idea of, we don't want to build build a new laptop. We don't want to build a new media reader. We want to build a digital version of electronic journal that'll be perfect for anybody who needs to collect.
That's kind of what this is.
Information, right?
Yeah.
So if they stick to that, as opposed to trying to then say, and then if you use the bottom screen, turns into the keyboard, right. and the top screen turns right. into a document window, you can run a mobile version of Office. I don't know if that's going to work.
They do say that, like Apple, they're going to do dedicated apps, quite a few dedicated apps for the courier platform. It's supposedly running the Tegra 2, which is a very nice, powerful system on a chip. It's impressive, but you know, these are, as you say, Andy, these are not even prototypes. These are flash videos.
Yeah, and the other thing that caught my eye is that it even seemed kind of cumbersome that you have this, a white silhouette of a hand like holding a stylus. This sort of backs up the comment that Bill Gates said earlier that I'm not impressed by the iPad because I think that you're going to need a stylus to make real use out mm-hmm. of a tablet. And you can just see all the different places where the little cartoon hand has to switch between tapping mm-hmm. things with her fingers and actually having to basically have to twirl the thing in her fingers in order to get back the stylus so she could then write things by hand. So I'm not sure how well that will actually work. That doesn't really grab me as I really want to spend an hour switching between tapping and dragging and having to hand write different notes and different things.
OneNote's very popular with students, though. I mean, Microsoft does have
it's popular with everybody. I know reporters that just swear by it.
Yeah. And so if this has a OneNote-like application running on it.
I think still the 800-pound gorilla is still iTunes Music Store. No, the iTunes yes. Store is that the iPad is going to connect to 100,000 applications.
But
the day
remember,
after it turns on.
Microsoft does have the Zune Marketplace, and it's pretty sophisticated, pretty nice, and it has as many songs.
No, as many songs. I mean, I'm talking about the applications. You know, the thing is that the thing is that there's a pipeline that's already built up in that area, and that's going to be the real challenge.
And I saw something really different in that commercial. I guess I saw if we're thinking of it as movie trailers. Like a lot of times you'll see a movie trailer right. for like a chick flick and it really, the idea is to tell you what the story is. That was like a trailer for a Michael Bay film. They just want to show you how cool the stuff is that blows up.
The iPad one.
What they ended up showing in that is, I saw two levels of stuff going on in that. No matter who you are, no matter how much you know about what this thing is, as long as you believe credibly that that is a real demo, it's mind blowing. Just because of the speed. And just the sense of like, they really get you that sense of affordance, as Jacob Nielsen would say, that you can just grab stuff, sort of like you're saying with changing the styluses. So on two levels, on the one hand, if you're an iPhone user, and Gruber mentioned this once, everybody does this, right? You grab your iPhone and you're at the top of the page and you're reading and you just start doing that thing where it goes flucka, 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 just because it's fun to do. And you know, you do this in Tweety and it makes a clicky noise and loads more tweets. It's really fun to use that interface. And if you see that as an iPhone user, you're going to be like, hell yeah, I'm going to buy one. But if you're not an iPhone user and you don't know that, boy, that feels really different than your Nuvi or your Chumbi. Or like now when I use my Nuvi or my Chumbi, I feel like I'm wearing like boxing gloves and trying to punch numbers.
Right.
You know? You know what I'm saying though? I mean,
no,
me,
I'm with you. I'm with you.
That was all sizzle, you know?
But you got to say, like, when you open up a Kindle and you immediately touch the screen and you go,
yeah.
Alex, the first hour I had a Kindle, I thought it was defective.
Touchscreen doesn't work.
It was absolutely true. I was getting a briefing a few months ago from Sony about their entire ebook line, and they have touch models and non-touch models. And after like going through the more affordable ones that don't do touch, going through the touch models and going back to the non-touch ones, you just instinctively want to tap parts of the screen, you know. And so that's a pretty big deal. But I really do think that my initial read on this is pretty, I'm sticking to my initial read, which is that Apple really wants to make sure that no matter who comes through the Apple store to take a look at an iPad, they will be able to sell them an iPad for whatever use case they're going to present to them.
That's my thinking.
People will find a use for this. It's one of those things that's like, it's one reason I kind of have a beef with these productivity tools that are like a freaking pinball machine. People like using them. And if there's a tool that you enjoy using, whether or not it ends up being, and this is not a criticism, it's just an observation, but like you will find reasons to use it. Whether or not, you know, it's like sort of like the nail and hammer analogy. I totally agree with you, Andy. I think people are going to see this thing. I think it's the Starbucks scenario. People are going to see people flying around and pages flipping by and all this stuff. And, you know, regardless of what any of us think about how usable that might be, they're going to see that and they're just going to be like, that is Minority Report. That is the coolest.
I'm going to be 4 hours on a plane the day after the iPad ships flying to Boulder for the Conference on World Affairs. I am pretty much resigned to the fact that I'm not going to be able to sleep on that flight because I'm going to be giving iPad demos to the entire cabin for all 4.5 hours.
That's the best thing about owning a new thing is that you get to show off in the plane. You kind of hope you get to go to get in the plane so you can show off.
I don't know, flight attendant. I'm not sure if this empty mug that should have tequila in it will affect my ability to show up.
Let's see if you can do it drunk.
This thing works a lot better if you put some little bottles of tequila next to it.
I could use it as a stand. So the real test, I think, of the success of the iPad will be in the first week and how many you see in Starbucks. And right. I predict you're going to see they're going to be like mushrooms. They're going to just be popping up.
I think the big question is really
if Apple supply. Can make them. Yeah,
yeah, it's because yeah, I think that if they only get 300,000 out, they'll sell all 300,000 in the first day. And so then it's just a matter of.
I've committed to buying three because we're giving one for myself. And then on Twit on Sunday, we picked a random person.
This is great.
You know, because Conan did it,
right?
And he got 15. This random woman, he just picked her and got 15,500 followers. So I, Kevin Rose and I said, well, maybe we could do that ourselves. So Kevin picked a random. He did a search for "I hate technology," and found a woman who had just joined Twitter, had 3 followers, 2 posts. The second of which was "I hate technology." So we said, "Oh, everybody follow her." She's in New Zealand. And I started to feel guilty when I realized that she's now received 13,242 unsolicited emails from Twitter saying we're following you. And so I said, well, we're going to give her an iPad, even though, you know, we'll have to buy it here and ship it to her.
So she can read them.
And then we're going to give one of these followers at random, we'll pick and we'll give them an iPad. So Lisa Tickled Pink, if you want to get in on this, we'll announce a winner. We'll find a winner and announce it on April 3rd on iPad.
If she decides to use it as a cheese board, I'm going to be so happy.
No, I talked to her this morning in New Zealand. She got on Kiwi FM, Whammo Radio in New Zealand, and I talked to her. And she's a very nice design student at a university in New Zealand. She created the account because her instructor said, okay, everybody has to try social media, create an account. And she said, I thought I broke it when I started getting all these emails. I don't know what happened. And I said, I am so sorry. I really should have warned you ahead of time. But she's very happy about it. She's really happy about getting an iPad. I think that took a lot of the sting out of it.
And then my professor said, oh, come on. I've gotten like 40,000 of those. You've just won a free email click, iPad clicker. But just delete it.
Just delete it. Forget it. So 13,242 followers right now. There's only 50,000 Twitter users in all of New Zealand. So I think we're going to get everybody in New Zealand to follow her anyway. Lisa Tickled Pink, if you want to follow her and get in on that iPad giveaway. Let's take a break, come back with more. You're listening to Mac Break Weekly. Andy Anatko is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth from 43folders.com and the fabulous, funny You Look Nice Today podcast, Mr. Merlin Mann and Alex Lindsay, who hosts about 8,000 podcasts on PixelCore, PixelCore.tv. Back to the conversation in a moment. Before we do, though, I would like very much to mention our good friends at Squarespace. In fact, you know, Dane went out to Squarespace headquarters in New York City. They're beautiful Soho offices, and went and met some of the Squarespace people. And we thought we'd be kind of fun for you to get to meet them as well. So here is our first look into the Squarespace offices.
My name is Anthony Coslina, and I'm the founder of Squarespace. I started Squarespace about 6.5 years ago from my dorm room. I started it originally because I needed a website for myself. It was originally just my homepage, and I wanted to have a blog, a photo gallery, a couple of pages, statistics system, and I wanted to be able to update it really easily. And I found that there was, you know, one or two programs that would let you do one, you know, fragment of that. But there was nothing that would let you do all of it in one package. And I'm really sensitive to interface and all that. And I really didn't like when I put all those programs together, how disjoint the interface was, how I had to go to all these different vendors. So that was the original incarnation of Squarespace, just trying to solve that problem. And through doing that, I think when you end up binding together certain features like that into a unified platform that's hosted, you get these kind of unexpected side effects that are very, very good. Like, for instance, if you've got one system that manages your statistics and your website, you know, that statistics platform can know more about what's happening on your website than if you were to just dump in Google Analytics. Or if membership systems are unified against multiple platforms like your photo gallery and your blog and other things, you end up being able to do much more with those packages than if they weren't integrated.
Anthony is really one of the great people at Squarespace. They do such a good job. If you have, these are their beautiful offices for people watching on video. I mean, really is spectacular. If you would like to set up a website with just the most amazing server, the most amazing software, the most amazing technology, I want to give you a chance to do that with the promo code MacBreak. You could actually go to squarespace.com right now, /MacBreak, and sign up. Try it free. You can import your data from all your existing blogs, from WordPress, from TypePad.
We swear by it.
Yeah, you use it, don't you?
Well,
yeah,
anytime we think of, oh, we're going to do a new site, we're like, yeah, and let's get a new
site. We're converting the Tech Guy site over. We did our Inside Twit blog over there. I mean, it's just really great.
Well, it's just so great to be able to WYSIWYG, get things working, yeah, and just have it done. Yeah.
Anthony really, it's neat to hear the story. He was in school and started it. Then they've made a great company out of it. Squarespace.com/MacBreak. Use the promo code MacBreak if you decide to sign up. As little as $8 a month, but you'll get 10% off, which if you only do the $8 a month is only 80 cents. But so it's really not such a great deal, come to think of it. But 10% is 10%. It adds up.
Yes.
You know, that's $9.60 a year.
You're going to get it back.
You're not made of money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's some money. A couple coffees.
Yeah. Squarespace.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Moving right along. What else is going on in the Mac world today? The Oscars. I was going to talk. Let's see. We did that.
We talked about the iPad announcement.
Gentlemen, have you got anything to say for yourselves? Are they still there?
No, I'm here. I'm looking at the stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Did we talk about the new Mac heist?
Oh, you know, we have, and this is the last day. When does it end?
Is it the last day? It's tomorrow, I think.
I was going to make it my pick, but you know what? We should probably mention it. We've talked to Philip Ryu before about Mac Heist. There was a little bit of concern about it. Was it John Gruber that was a little critical of Mac Heist? Because it seemed like it was just too good a deal. This is an amazing deal. The latest one is $20 for just a bunch of stuff, including a number of things we've recommended. Like Andy, you recommended Rip It. That's $20 by itself.
Well, I've made my peace with it. I've decided it's
Are you okay
Walmart.
With it?
It's Walmart. Well, no, I'm not. I think it's Walmart for Mac indie developers. You can't afford to do it, and you can't afford not to do it.
Can't afford not to do it.
And it's like if you read the stories about Snapper or Vlasic or any of the companies that worked decades to build a brand, and they're like, well, I got to go make a version of this that like doesn't actually make me that much money, but I've got to be in that store. So, I mean, it's nothing, you know, particularly against them. But,
it's a very powerful marketing tool.
And the thing that we got wrong, I think, in sort of the telling of the story before was that, you know, nobody had a gun to their head to do it.
Right.
And they knew what they were getting or not getting out of it. And the people who don't want to do it, don't do it now. And the people who do. And, you know, it's just a question of where you are in your business. And, you know, if you're bootstrapping and you have the opportunity to get your product in front of all those people.
No, I don't think those checks are insignificant either. For a lot, especially, it's probably the biggest single
especially
check
for Phil.
Sorry?
Yeah, Phil makes some money on it. But, you know, he gives a lot of money to charity.
Oh, well, you know. I think that's so funny when people say
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
It's like in that Simpsons when Lisa's on the tour and what is it? The woman says something like, you know, a percentage of all proceeds go to charity. And she goes, what percentage? She goes, zero.
That's a percentage. That's a percentage. So it's 8 apps, Mac Journal, Rip It, Clips, Cover Scout, which is $40, Flow, which we've talked about, Tales of Monkey Island. I didn't even know that was still around. Rapid Weaver, which is fantastic. They just added that, $19.95. Tweety will be unlocked when they get to 56,789 bundles. Wow, they sell a lot of them. So do some math. They've sold almost, let's say they've sold 50,000 bundles at $20. That's $1 million, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And they're going to give $258,000 to charity. There's one day left. I don't know. $250,000 to charity. That's not bad. And how much we don't know what the developer's cut is, do we?
We don't know. I mean,
but even if the developers, let's say the developers get another $250,000, that still leaves Philip and his crew $500,000. Maybe the developers get more.
It's brilliant marketing. I mean, you can't deny it. The way it's brilliant. And the way that it's got that kind of network effect to it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And if memory serves, I think it doesn't it automatically tweet when you buy it? Doesn't it automatically send it
encourage
to
you to, in which case you get Airbrushed Extreme Tracks and Burning Monkey Solitaire if you tweet. And that's brilliant. Of course, Good marketing.
It's really, yeah. It's really
they get better at it every year. I mean, it's they keep on tying it all in, and I think that for someone, if you're listening to the show, I mean, 1995 for all these apps is a pretty good deal.
You know, I've resisted.
You've resisted.
I'm kind of with you, Merlin. I feel dirty.
I can't put my finger on it, Leo. It bugs me. I'm sorry.
I know what you mean.
It bugs me. You know, and the thing is, there's this really neat thing you can do if you really want to give money to charity. There's this thing you can do, which is giving money to charity. If it matters to you to give money to charity, give it to charity.
No, otherwise, I agree with you on
it just
that.
Becomes a way of going. It's like this whole green thing. It becomes this way to go like, oh, it's okay that I'm going to go spend money on this thing because a portion of it goes to charity. And it's like, I think that has become like the starving black child of you know, why we buy what we do. And, you know, why don't you just own it? Why don't you just go buy it because you want to buy it? I really,
well,
it's
I think Philip
Stalin,
did this.
Stalin gave away a portion of charity, then everybody would forgive the gulags, right?
Right. I think, though, that that's, Philip did that when he was getting.
Okay. We managed to avoid Godwin there.
Well, Stalin's good. Stalin's good. Oh, that's good. It's Godwin's corollary.
Just pulled out at the last second there. That was good.
I don't think
that anybody is buying this package because they care about whatever causes are being helped by the bundle. I think they're buying it because, hey, $20. There are at least two apps there that I was thinking of buying, and even if I just get these four others for free, that's still a good deal. I mean, it's money for it's. I keep coming back to something that an organizer told me about 10 years ago that said, getting money is better than not getting money. And the alternative for if it's nice that some part of this is going towards a designated charity, that there has to be oversight, and this is not going to be a successful thing for them unless they make sure that they make it very, very clear at the very, very end. So, well, here's how much money was raised. Here's how much what percentage of that went to the charities. Here are the charities we gave it to, and here are how these charities have been ranked in terms of their ability to take the money that is given to them and turn it into social change or to the programs that we're trying to fund.
But I just think that becomes for businesses, especially for corporations, that becomes grandma's funeral. Well, it's like every time somebody wants to say something and not even want to say criticized, but anytime somebody wants a free pass to do whatever they want, you just say, oh, you know, it's grandma's funeral, right? Okay. We're giving money to charity. That's so weak, you know?
Okay, but have they ever said, in reply to criticisms, not replying to the criticism itself, but saying, but hey, man, it's all for charity.
That's a valid point
if that's what they're doing. But
I think it's a significant amount. I mean, I think there's a lot of companies that talk about 1% or 3% or whatever. They're giving a pretty significant amount of money to charity. But I don't think people are doing it because of charity. I think it makes everybody feel good. They're saving a lot of money. The thing is to also remember that Photoshop did not become ubiquitous selling at $6.95 or $7.95, which is what it came out at. The retail was $6.95, $7.95. But the reason Photoshop became ubiquitous is because it sold OEM at $99 or $100 to the scanner manufacturers.
That's true.
So the reason Photoshop is the standard today is because they sold it at 15% the price, and it came free with every scanner that you had, and now they own the market. You know, and we look at this all the time. We bundle stuff. We do sales. We bundle stuff with our other stuff. We do this all the time. We would have been in the Mac Heist deal if they had sent us an email. You know, like as one of the unlocks for a $200. You know, I would have done it in a heartbeat.
What would you? How much money would you expect from it?
I don't, you know, it's just another marketing, another making sure people know about our product. I bet you we would get a check for somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000.
So you don't really care. Well, that's actually not an insignificant amount of money, but it's less than you'd get if you'd sold that many.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't sell that.
But
many.
I wouldn't. But you wouldn't. It's not a lost sale. It's a different opportunity. It's a different set of people that are buying it that weren't buying it before. You know, and it's a one time. What makes it work is that it's a one time sale. It's not all the time it comes out. You know, people aren't going to wait another year to buy a conduit. The people, our general clientele, aren't going to wait another year. I'm not going to key anything because I got to wait for the next Mac Heist. And they don't even know if we're going to do it the next year. You know, and so it's so the thing is that that's
true.
It
doesn't cost you sales. It's a lot of people that aren't involved.
You also run into that thing with the 99-cent app race to the bottom kind of stuff where I buy a lot of stuff on the iTunes store for my phone. And I'm starting to notice that, I mean, you guys probably noticed this a long time
ago. Prices are going up.
Well, that, but also there's a lot of apps that I'm kind of like, wow, I can't believe that's only 99 cents. But I think that 99 cents barrier is, I guess 99 cents, that must be the least you can charge, right?
Yeah.
Because, wow, I mean, there are a lot of apps for 99 cents. Because, you know what I mean? It's like you're going to compete on volume. You're going to get more volume at 99 cents than you are at $1. But the other thing is, this is an engineering problem. There's also a cost associated with support. So like Gus Mueller, I'm just looking at this post Gus Mueller had a few years ago about Mac Heist, just talking about what it means for somebody who's trying to bootstrap, you know, a company. But I also think about somebody like, there's so many places, like you think about Buzz Anderson or the folks at Omni Group, and like they're really dedicated to a certain level of support. And if you're giving it away for, you know, $2 a copy, and then you agree to support it for the rest of the, you know, life of that, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to seem like I'm ganging up on these guys, but I just, you know, I see people who've worked really hard at this to like be able to charge a premium for what they do, and then to feel like they've got to essentially just sort of give it away.
Well, and I have to admit that my reaction is also that I got a lot of those Stern talks when we released a Keir, a professional level green screen Keir for $200. I had companies that sell their product for $600 and $1,400 and $800, furious. You know, with us. You know, that we were going
to
sell it.
Did you ever have an account at DreamHost? Like, not to slam DreamHost, but have you ever gone to, like, a shared server service where they go, they say, oh, gosh, don't listen to all those other guys. You don't want to go someplace where you got metered bandwidth. I can't believe you're going to go to Pear.com where you get only whatever 2 gigs a month. We'll give you unlimited bandwidth. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of those places will give you unlimited bandwidth as long as you never use it. It's called overselling. And if everybody in that had one of those quote-unquote unlimited accounts used it at the same time, everything would go down. They don't have that much pipe.
But people, you know, don't.
But they don't. And, but they never do.
But they don't. But if you buy it because you can, and then everybody does, I'm just saying it's I'm sorry.
If everyone who signed up for a gym actually went to the gym, it would shut down.
Right. Yeah. Everybody does that.
It's like overselling a flight.
Yeah. It's just what everybody does. You have to do it. Otherwise, you're wasting. I share your kind of gut misgivings, Merlin, but it's hard for me to find an intellectual reason for it. And the other reason I don't buy it is because I don't want to fill up my hard drive with a bunch of crap I don't want.
A lot of it's good. It really is. There's an article, I think I want to say in The Atlantic or Harper's a few years ago about Walmart. And it wasn't a hit job, but it was a really good article where they went out and talked to these companies that, and the ones that come to mind was Vlasic. The article opens by talking about Vlasic pickles. It didn't used to be, you wouldn't find pickles in the refrigerated area of the grocery store. They were one of the first companies to put a giant amount of money into building this brand around paying a little more for pickles. Now, sure, you could say that that's a ripoff, that they're charging more. Or you could say that, oh, I'm going to go buy cheaper pickles. But it kind of sucks that in order for them to compete in the marketplace, they've got to go to Walmart. And Walmart says, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to make a 5-gallon thing of pickles. It's going to be $10, and you're going to lower that price every year, or you're not going to play here. Levi's, you're going to have to come out with a new kind of blue jeans to sell in here that you can't sell anywhere else.
But this isn't quite that, because you don't have to sell on Mac Heist. There's no leverage.
You don't have to be at Walmart either.
Yeah, but this is a tiny segment. This is like
this is some, not the same.
It's not anywhere near the same.
Independent Mac software. This is tiny.
I mean, it is, but the thing is if I'm making something, if I'm an independent developer that's not developing something that directly competes with the 7 things or 8 things that are here, it doesn't really affect me at all, because when I'm paying $20 or $30 for a piece of software, I'm handling a niche need that I have. If it's not one of those things, it's not going to matter.
I was just piggybacking on what you said, though, and I guess I'm agreeing with your competitors. If you're a company that's not charging $200 for a green screen app, there might be a really good reason for that, and maybe you just can't compete.
Well,
I don't know.
Here's the deal: is the difference is that they have a different business model than me. Mine is we develop software because we use it, and then we pay off the engineering by selling it. And so the thing is that we don't. I don't need to build the business the way they did. So I have a much more efficient system to do it. I have made, we support it. We're able to support it. We're able to do it at a much more efficient reason. And I don't feel like I have any, I don't owe them anything. I don't know these guys. You know, I don't know these guys. I'm not going to sit there and protect their market because, you know, just because I'm much more efficient than they are, you know, and that's the thing.
But if a place moved in next door to you and started selling what you do at a tenth of the price, even though, because they could get the work, even if it, I mean, there is something to be said. And I'm not talking about like unionization even. I'm just saying that like in order for, and this is totally selfish. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm just going to admit this. I have a lot of friends that are independent Mac developers and I like to see them thrive. A lot of them charge a lot for a product because they put an extraordinary amount of work into it. And I think when people start giving this stuff away and start basically cheapening the idea that basically software is this thing that has no marginal cost because it's just software. Well, you know, if you support your product and you really treat it like an adult would, it costs a lot of money. If you pay your employees health insurance, that costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so I'm
you're
not,
right.
I'm,
there is a cost to discounting and lowballing.
But I just don't think it's as simple as saying I'm just going to charge less because I don't need the money.
The developer of our primary product, I just want to put it in perspective. the developer of our primary, you know, green screen product makes more money, made more money last year than I did. So, I mean, I just want to make sure that it's not, you know, we're not talking about lowballing anything.
Right.
You know, the thing at the price that we're selling at.
And he's happy.
Also,
I think he's happy. I hope he's happy because
also,
I mean, really
look at these apps that are being built. They're not really being done by even middle level software companies. They really do seem like your basic kitchen table software company, where there's two or three people associated with developing this app and supporting this app, and that these are people who are exploiting themselves more than anything else.
Right.
A lot of these developers
they should not be allowed to exploit themselves.
Exactly.
And I have to admit that my model for everything, every business that I wanted to get into was me start, you know, I'd be sweeping the floors to get into radio. That's how I got,
right.
And then I outperformed everybody there until they let me in. I mean, I was told that I was being taken advantage of all the way to working on Star Wars at ILM. You know, the thing is that it's not, it is, I did whatever I needed to do to move forward. And I looked at everyone else waiting for everything to be fair as, you know, people that I passed by on the way through. And when I got to ILM, I found a whole bunch of people that were just like me.
Right.
You know, so the thing
that's how you get there.
That's how you get there. You know, and when we started our company has been very successful in this software because I felt like I was the reason we wrote our own software is I got tired of paying for their software. I was like, this is too much money for what
it
does.
You know what's good news? And I have to commend Apple for this. They dropped the price to become an Apple developer.
Yeah,
$99.
That's
baby. So cool.
Apple Developer Connection Select or Premier program was $4.99 and $34.99 a year in the past. Now you get it for, do you get the same thing you'd get for the Premier? No, probably not. I don't know.
Yeah, I have to imagine, like, in terms of like getting into like WWDC and stuff like that, I imagine that's got to be. Do you know much about that? Well, actually, do you go to WWDC and Alex?
I've spoken there once and I've gone a couple times. It is one of the best. It is. Incredible. I mean, and it'll sell out this year. It'll, because of the iPad, it will sell out like 2 days after it opens.
I think it's the go-to conference. I've never had to pay to go, but I mean, I understand for the folks who are going to be there. Is that right, Andy? It's pretty costly.
Yeah, I mean, historically, there's always been that firewall between not just the expense of going, but also the fact that you have to be a member of a club in order to get in. And there's at some point someone who says that you can come and you cannot come. So that's always, I think the end effect of that has always been that you don't get. I'll use the word riffraff because it's two syllables instead of like the four sentences it would take to explain the idea of people who are there because they're interested as opposed to people who are there to learn or there who have information to share. So I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody who's attended WWDC with a goal in mind who did not find those goals met.
It's $1,200 to get a WWDC ticket, yeah. But you don't get that anymore. Yeah. That's not part of the deal. And you also you don't get the hardware discounts. Yeah. Which were significant. You only get 10 support incidents, but 10's enough for a lot of people.
Yeah. What I wanted to check is, do you also get seeds of betas?
You do.
From upcoming OS releases.
It looks like you do.
I think this is a lot like the earlier days in the developer program. I joined the developer program initially because I just wanted to get access to beta seeds. I wanted to get access to information you couldn't get access to elsewhere. That was like it's sort of like AppleCare Plus. And I think a lot of people are going to see that $99 as an interesting. People who are operating at a certain level are going to buy that extra $99 package just to get access to the developer seats.
I did it
for Leopard.
Sure. You get pre-releases, technical documentation, Xcode 3. You get that for free. Development videos, member-only developer forums, and two technical code-level support incidents. An additional incidents purchased in bundles of two for $99.
And this is $99 a year, right?
Yeah. Yep. And remember the iPhone developer program was $99 as well.
That's
so
great.
Essentially, they've eliminated all these fancy programs. If you know, you're going to go ad hoc if you want to buy more support. You're going to go ad hoc if you want to buy hardware. You'll pay for your ticket to WWDC. I think this is great. I think this is what Apple should do. This is how you get developers involved. Did you make it that you lower the level to get?
I think that if Apple wanted to, they could make WWDC nearly the size of Macworld. And there's so many.
Yeah, I wonder
who want
why they don't. You know,
it'd just be something else they have to manage. They don't really, you know, that's not. Maybe they should. Who knows? Maybe we should do a conference before it.
I have to say, for $99, I think I will join. I mean, why not?
We should do TwitWorld both the week before before that show.
TwitWorld.
Well, we were talking about.
You know what? We can mention this. Alex and I are really excited about doing this. You know what Big Nerd Ranch is?
Oh yeah, yeah. I went to college with Aaron.
Aaron Hillegas wrote
the
bestest book on cocoa development, which I have and I love.
I'm dying.
And he created Big Nerd Ranch, which is kind of, it's in Atlanta area.
It's outside of Atlanta, yeah.
Do you stay there? Is it?
I think you stay. You stay there. You're in a cocoon of coding.
We met the guys at Macworld, and when I met him, I said, you know, I've always wanted to do a TWiT like week at Big Nerd, because they do week. You go there for a week to study development. So I always wanted to do a TWiT week at Big Nerd Ranch. And so I think we're going to do that in, we don't know yet, maybe June or July. We have to figure it out. June, yeah. And we'll have a few to give away. Alex and I will go. If you guys want to go, please, we'd love to have you guys go.
When is this? When do you want to do this?
Well, we don't know the date yet. We're working on it.
We're talking about, we don't have the dates yet, but we're talking about, it's like they have a course, it's a great course on iPhone development, and it really starts you cover Objective-C for a couple days, and then you dive into
You have to know Objective-C first, right?
We have to know some programming first, right. and then scripting, programming, some C, but then you go in and they'll cover Objective-C for 2 days, and then iPhone development for 5 days, and I know that I just want to know enough to fiddle. Because we have people that we work with to actually do the coding, heavy coding. But I want to be able to fiddle with building my own little iPhone apps that are silly. And
me too. That's what I want.
Yeah. And so I think this is going to. I almost went when we started talking about it, I got so excited. They have one next week. It's sold out.
You almost just went.
I almost paid for it. And I was just like, I'm just going to go down there right now and just.
I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
So I'm pretty sure we're going to do this. They've agreed to do it. So we just have to figure out a date that.
Just our dates that.
Because we kind of have to shut down.
So it makes everybody on the team. I've always felt like the best teams that I've been on. Certainly there's a certain degree of specialization, but also the really best teams were the ones where there was like a little bit of overlap between the different jobs people had, where you understood enough about what other people did that you could speak intelligently and have some empathy for what their problems were that are different from yours. And you know, getting your hands dirty with that stuff would really help you understand, you know. I cracked open an open Xcode the other day just to kind of go look at what would be involved in making an iPhone app. And it's gorgeous, but I have no idea where it is. I don't know if it's a view-based
I
app.
Think, well, that's, for me, I think I we could do it. Hump. I think, yeah, there's a hump. And if we got over the hump,
then we could do it. Start a whole podcast on programming.
I think a small nerd.
I think it'd be valuable if anybody were able to do like a developer camp that was more like iPhone developer fantasy camp or iPad developer fantasy camp for guys like us who are not thinking that we're going to be building the next Photoshop for the iPad or for the desktop, but we just want to understand all the technologies that make this sort of work. And if we were to ever work with programmers and they would say, well, we've got the NS class view, but unfortunately we can't do a WebKit view inside the text view unless we render this out as PDF beforehand, which means we're going to need to have four different versions of this PDF just to make sure that the scaling works, and we would be able to nod and actually understand what's going on. We won't be able to write the code, but we'd be able to maybe understand the frameworks and how they operate. I think that'd be something I would definitely sign up for.
By the way, they had a new website up, if you haven't been there recently, and it's beautiful. Unbelievable.
And they're building a new ranch. They're a monastic learning center that encompasses Aaron's vision for where technical education.
I was in a band with Aaron. Aaron played sax. We were in a really crappy ska band together. I think it was called Dog School. And I played guitar and he played sax. He's the real deal. He is such a great guy.
The thing that won me over is
in the foreword,
I guess this must be him right in the hat here, the cowboy hat. Is that him?
Yep.
He looks tall. He also looks like he's got a small head or a big hat, one or the other. The thing that won me over is he says in the foreword, he says, coffee is not a substitute for a good night's sleep. He says, you must get a good night's sleep if you come to Big Nerd Ranch. I am seeing it as nerd fantasy camp. I am not seeing it as like I'm going to become a pro. I'm seeing it as fantasy camp.
Totally. Yeah.
So that's what we're gonna do, and we'll tell you the details.
Would it be just the TWiT folks, or would the only thing I'm thinking, and not to sound unkind, but like if there's folks there who do know it, would it be dragging down the more experienced folks if there are a bunch of noobs there?
That's up to the nerd ranch folks, but I think that we would try to take over the ranch for a week, basically.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the plan.
it would be like Regis and Kathy Lee when they go to
Disneyland.
They go to Busch Gardens.
Busch Gardens.
Exactly. With Dungeon Dice.
Yeah. Yeah, we could play Werewolf at Night. It'll be fun. It'll be really fun. I can't wait.
Do each other's hair, talk about boys.
Yeah, that'd be great. I can't wait. Yeah. I'll give you my IM handle if you give me yours. So anyway, that's just something we're playing with. But obviously now we're going to get a lot of email. We better do it.
Yeah, now we're committed.
Yeah. We're committed.
Never share a good idea before you realize how much work is going to be involved.
Oh, boy.
You're talking to a person who twice has suggested, you know, it would be a great seminar for me to do 3 hours on networking on a cruise ship with no network of its own.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Great idea, but 4 months in advance when you're packing up.
Seemed like a good idea.
You need to develop it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well. So, folks, we're going to take a break and get our picks of the week here in just a little bit. There's a lot more to talk about, but as usual, we're right up against the wall, and we ended up rat-holing our way out of existence here. So let's just take a little break and get our Audible pick of the week, and then we'll get to your software or hardware picks of the week with our panelists, Mr. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, Mr. Merlin Mann from 43folders.com, and, of course, Alex Lindsay from PixelCore. First, though, let me tell you about Audible.com. It's a great place to get books, audio books, audio entertainment of all kinds. They've also got comedy performances and radio shows, classic radio. Audible.com, take a look. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for the gold account. That'll give you a book a month. And the first one's free, yours to keep. You can cancel at any time. But I'm telling you, Audible has just changed my life. I started listening to audiobooks many years ago when I had a long commute to Tech TV. I was getting cassettes. And then I discovered Audible about 2001, and 300 or 400 books later, I am just the biggest Audible nerd. I listen to at least a couple of books a month, and I love it. Take a look at audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up for your first book. There's some good stuff on the front of here. What are you listening to these days, Andy? You got anything for us? I was thinking this, the Yugo, the rise and fall of the worst car in history. That might be good.
Well, you know, the Yugo did give the Trabant a run for its money there. So it's good to see competition in the former Soviet Republic marketplace.
Yes.
As they learn capitalism from the bottom up, literally.
Actually,
the book that I literally bought just about a half an hour ago was something I've been sort of eyeing for a little while. Audible lets you maintain a wish list so that there are things you're sort of eyeballing it, and then you put in the wish list. And then my process, because I get that one credit a month off my gold plan. And then the next thing is I'll read some reviews, and then usually I'll download like the free preview you can get like on Kindle, even on through your Kindle app. And I just find myself when I find myself rereading the intro to this book three times, I realize that, okay, I'm going to need to buy the audiobook. It's called The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America by Timothy Egan.
Oh, how interesting. I saw that. I want to get that.
It was about this wildfire in the early 1900s that grew to the size of the state of Connecticut. And eventually it would destroy enough the same amount of land as is currently in Yellowstone National Park. And just to, if you have an iPhone and you have the Kindle app, I guarantee just download the intro to this, in which he opens up by explaining what it was like in this small town. They know that this fire is coming. They don't know whether they need to evacuate this town that they've already rebuilt once after wildfires 20 years ago. They're hoping that they don't lose their town a second time, but they know here are the plans, what happens if it turns out that the fire is still advancing. And the description is so vivid of what that day was like that you could almost be certain that, no, this is 1941 and the army is advancing on this small, small village because that's what the fire was like. It was the great enemy. It was being fought by military people. It was fought by civilians using every implement they could have at hand. The women and children were being put onto trains, told that, no, you cannot take your pet parrot with you. You have to just leave everything and just count on it being destroyed. You'll be lucky to leave with your lives. And that's really the only recommendation that counts for any book. It is so well written. But the larger story is the context he puts it in about Teddy Roosevelt, who, as he's starting his presidency, is really big on conservation, it's killing him that all these land barons are stripping the natural resources of America bare for minerals and all this other resources. And he really has it on the back of his mind that I really want to make sure that we can start protecting this land. So he started the Forest Service with one of his trusted guys, and all the different congressmen who are worried about, who are being essentially in the timber and the metal industries pockets, are like underfunding it and trying to undermine it however it happens. And then there's this incredible wildfire that is not just destroying natural forests, but it's destroying every town that's been built. That we're trying to claw our way west to actually expand the country, to drive the rail spurs west, take advantage of the resources of this land, hopefully in a manageable way, but either way. And suddenly it becomes such a popular cause, aided and abetted by journalists who bring home all these reports of the desperate situations of these towns, that unfortunately the congressman realize that they cannot stay at the pork trough if people will vote them out of the office, and being voted back into office means making sure this would never happen again. So this it almost feels as though it may be a cheap way in my mind that it's kind of similar to the Iraq War in many ways, because if not for this big, huge disaster, this plan that was in the back of these guys' minds, who probably would not have been able to get funding for this thing they wanted to do, suddenly had their reason to leap this forward, because finally, this was something that could get everybody's mind on this one problem and how we can actually address it. And it steered the focus of the world's attention, excuse me, of the country's attention towards the importance of maintaining the forests, making sure that, you know, if whether you're on one side or the other, when you're on conservationist side or, geez, we need all these minerals and all these resources, either way you want the wildfires to stop, because you cannot get resources out of a land that's, if all the rail spurs, if all the roads and all the people who are there to help haul that ore out of the land are just burned to death. So, but what a compelling opening couple of chapters. Like I said, I've read it twice. I've read those things twice already. And that at that point, I start to feel like a bum who's just sort of saying, okay, look, this Egan fellow, he worked awfully hard on that. I think you should give him some money.
Buy the freaking book. You know, Roosevelt was the one who started the national parks, right? I mean, so this is how the national parks got their start, really.
Yeah, and that's really, if there's any way that really, it's the book makes the statement that if there's a reason why we have a national park system, if there's a reason why all this forestry land is absolutely owned by the people, available to the people, cannot be exploited by other people, and no, that's not negotiable, it was this fire that gave the people who were on this side the political power to say, nope, we own this, we're taking this land, we cannot develop it, we cannot put more people on it. We're going to staff it with lots and lots of new rangers and lots of new resources so that anybody who wants to enjoy that land for private use can do it for their own in a public way can do that. But nope, it's locked down. You ain't getting to Yellowstone. That's it.
Yeah. Boy, that would have been horrible, wouldn't it? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just terrible.
I mean, it was, again, the descriptions of what was going on, but from the people who were fighting this fire. And, you know, they're taking prisoners out of prison cells and putting a shovel in their hands and saying that you can either fight this fire and die on your feet as a hero, or you can run and we'll shoot you in the head and you'll be burned anyway. They've got to die here. Exactly. That was exactly it. They were told you know what? Yeah. You have a slim chance of survival. That is in helping us fight this fire. If you try to run, you know what? There ain't going to be a body left to autopsy, son. We'll just pretend that you just got caught up in the flames.
Sounds like a Quentin Tarantino movie in the making there. I think that's the option this week.
Inglorious Firefighters.
Yeah, Inglorious Firefighters. The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America, Timothy Egan, the author. Yes, this could be yours absolutely free. As with many of our Audible books, all you have to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak. You get a credit towards your first book, and it's yours to keep even if you decide to cancel at any time. Really a great... I love Audible. A great service. I'm listening to three different Audible books right now. It's so funny. The Time Traveler's Wife, which I love, is very romantic. I didn't see the movie, but I love the book. Demon by Daniel Suarez, which is incredible, incredible story. And The Black Hole Wars by Susskind, which is about physics and black holes. See, a little nonfiction, a little fiction, a couple of little fiction sci-fi. I just love that.
I've been dabbling with Super Freakonomics.
That's a good book, except there's some issues on the climate.
Is that the chapter. One where you shoot the hose into the sky to make global warming go away?
Yeah, that's exactly. There's a little bit of a problem with that chapter, but other than that,
and the kid stays in the picture I took from Andy's recommendation.
Book.
And
that isn't it Robert Evans?
Oh my gosh, it is so good.
Oh my god.
See, you know, this turns you back onto books in the same way that Napster got me back into music.
Right.
Absolutely. I've been trying to find like a way to write about this so that when people yell at me that I'm an idiot, that at least they'll make points that are absolutely fair as opposed to points that are just unbalanced. Because I honestly, I'm almost at the point where if independent bookstores die, I'm kind of okay with that. Because so much of the content now is digital. I'm reading way more books through both through electronic means and also through listening to them via Audible than I ever read when I always had to be carrying around, you know, hardcovers wherever I went. And I also had a bad experience with a really great bookstore in San Francisco that announced to me that they do not carry P.G. Woodhouse because the buyer does not like him. At which point I just turned, I wasn't angry, but I'm like, but that means that I can't trust any of your decisions in any kind. And you're the City Lights bookstore. You're one of like the five
City
most
Lights
famous bookstore. Exactly.
That's shocking.
They said, no, we don't carry wood. We don't.
Would you like some Ferlinghetti?
Well, the folks who worked there were actually apologetic. They're like, no, Paul doesn't like him. I'm like, wait, Paul doesn't like who? Woodhouse. I'm like, Paul is the name of your spaniel dog, the little mascot. No, he's a human being with like eyes and ears and a brain. Oh, okay.
It's really weird.
City Lights is like one of those places where you go and the hamburgers are good as long as you like it exactly like the owner makes it.
Right.
Like if you don't want an egg on it, you should go somewhere else, you know? Right.
And that's fine. It's just to realize that as a consumer myself, that means that if the City Lights bookstore like were to close its shop, there'd be tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of words written about what a damn shame it is and how this illustrates the problems of independent bookstores. But I'd be like, oh, well, that was a bad store anyway. Who cares? I would never step foot back in there.
By the way, there's a great bio of Teddy Roosevelt on Audible called Theodore Rex, which I read some time ago. Really great story. He was a character.
Yeah,
character
he got
and
shot,
a half.
And then he gave a speech.
I mean, he had a bullet in him, and then he gave a speech,
and that's what I call that's.
He's also
we don't make
such
guys
an interesting,
like that anymore.
We're so used to understanding all of these like kind of false dichotomies. Like in the last 30, 40 years, it seems like there's so many. You know, you got to be this way or you got to be that way. And he's in retrospect, he seems like such a. I mean, he was a complex character, but there's so many things. Like he loved to hunt, but he was also like
a conservationist.
He's got to be one of the greatest conservationists.
Yeah, yeah right.
You know, and you know, my dad, for example, my dad was in Ducks Unlimited. You know,
yeah,
he was
they're like, conservationists because they want to save the ducks. Yeah, we're gonna save them so we can kill them. No, Ducks Unlimited is great. They do a lot of great work preserving the duck environments in this state. I think that we wouldn't have a lot of the environmental stuff we have if it weren't for the
I should do something like that with steer and lobster.
Yeah. Lobster Unlimited. I'd join that club.
I just
want
to make sure they're always there.
Yeah, lobster. Beef Unlimited. All right.
There's a reason why the lobstermen have to measure the baby lobsters and throw them back in when they're caught. It's not because they don't want to kill baby lobsters. It's because the baby lobsters aren't as tasty.
That's right.
I'll see you again soon enough.
put on some lean mass. One of those special exercises we discussed.
A couple more LBs and you'll do nicely.
Oh, they're just big bugs. All right, it's time now, ladies and gentlemen.
Tasty bugs.
Big tasty bugs.
We love them.
Hello, buggy. It is time for our pick of the week. Let us start with you, Mr. Alex Lindsay, since you're sitting right here.
I have two picks.
Two picks.
One hardware, one iPhone.
All right.
So the first one, and I'm only recommending this. I've had this for a long time, but I'm recommending it because three times in the last week, I put a smart card into my computer, my older laptop, and someone said, "How did you do that?" And this is what you need.
I have one of those, and I love it.
You have an Express card.
Yep.
This is SanDisk makes it. It's
that's the one I have.
It's the Express card adapter for SDHC, multimedia card, MMC Plus, memory stick.
You don't really need that anymore in the
you
newer
don't need
ones.
It in the newer ones, but if you have an older one with an Express card and you're trying to figure out how to have something portable that you can just absolutely pop. I just keep it in my computer all the time. And I have to admit, I really like this solution better than the one that Apple came up with, which is only have an SD card reader. I love having my Express
card. Yeah, you get the flexibility if you need it.
We go keyers and all kinds of other stuff into my laptop through my Express card. And it's actually why I'm hanging on to this laptop, is specifically so I can have my Express slot. But most of the time, 90% of the time, all I need is an SD card. So that's my hardware.
Well, they have one for Compact Flash, too.
And they have one for Compact Flash.
I should
it
get
sticks
the compact.
Out. The one for compact flash sticks out a little bit, which is a little bit of a bummer.
I have the when I bought my 15-inch MacBook Pro,
right?
The first unibody, which didn't have the reader. That's when I bought it. I bought the reader,
right?
Because I and it's so convenient to pop that right in there.
No, I just use it all the time. And so and as I said, people were like, "What is that? You know, how are you doing that on an older computer?" And that's how I do it.
Yeah.
The second one is just a fun.
It was about $30, as I remember.
Yeah, like
expensive.
$25-$30. Yeah. It's nothing major. The second one is this music. So I'm trying not to play as many games, and I got this thing called Digital Bassline. Have you guys seen this?
Mm-mm.
So let's see if I can. I don't know if it's going to have the one I just. Yeah, it might have here. So here we go. So here, so it's silly.
So you can have your own theme song, basically, as you walk through the streets of the city.
So this is a sequencer. This is a, you know, it's a DB303 sequencer, and I can play with the distortion, and I can do all the. This isn't a very good one. I was just playing, but the point is you have all the basic sequencer stuff that you would normally, you know, have on one of those things, and. And you can put it together. It's a lot of fun. And it's really, you know, it still has
now,
that
can you do anything
feel.
With it or just play it?
Well, no, you can build stuff. So you can, so I can go. And then,
well, I'm glad you can do that.
Well, I'm working on it. I'm adding. It takes a little while to take notes.
Oh, I'm just teasing you. Come on. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Celery and carrots are just the base of a soup.
Yeah, by pure profit.
It's not going to just be celery and carrots. And it is, it's not going to be a boring soup.
$4.99. It is really cool looking because you got a display.
See, I'm starting slowly. So you can slowly put all this stuff together.
You get a keyboard,
and then you can add them together. And then I can go back to play. Sorry, it has this little dash where you're adding things. So what you basically have a 16-beat measure that you are slowly adding. What is it going to do for each note? So you keep on building up these different layers. And so
sure, that's good stuff. Mighty good stuff.
Anyway,
Zzz.
I like it. So anyway,
digital baseline. For $4.99.
It's a lot of fun. And I got into this thing where I downloaded a whole bunch of them. See, this is
you
I
can
feel
download
like
more
bass
lines for it.
No, I downloaded a whole bunch of sequencers and so on and so forth. And
yeah,
I feel like this is part of my job for this is to go buy a bunch of these and play them all. And that was the best one. So, you know,
thank you.
So that's what I'm trying to do more of is, you know, get a bunch of them, play with them and not go into each one of them. But of all of the ones that I played with, that is the best one I could find.
Very cool. Moylan Man, your pick of the week, sir.
He's gone.
I'm here. I'm sorry.
He went to get his pick.
Invisibility app.
Can I be honest?
Invisibility cloak is amazing.
Let me be honest. Let me be honest. I just ordered a pizza. And they made me.
The guy came?
I had to call to confirm my order. And that's what happened.
Oh, hey, that's the most important thing. In fact, we'll be right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
What'd you get on the pizza?
Seriously?
Yeah.
I think I got it's a little meaty. Is that okay?
No, I love meat.
I got sausage, mushroom, linguica, you know, the Portuguese sausage.
Yeah, linguica. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Linguica. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Oh. And extra cheese. And then I got some hot wings. And what I do is I'll eat the wings. I'm like an old person. And then I have a little of the pizza and then I save it in the refrigerator. I can have multiple meals. So, my mozzarella de buffalo in West Portal. Look it up.
Ooh, it sounds awful good.
It is awful good. Yeah, and you know, the thing is these shows go on, and I figure I got to take care of myself. Otherwise, I can't help you guys, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No,
I keep my
it's the best.
Put on your own mask before you try to assist
exactly.
others.
Exactly, Andy, precisely. I have, I don't know how to... I have, I guess, kind of 1.5 or 2.5 picks that are very related. I discovered something as I've been... writing more as a thing that I do, that I tend to work in different modes that all sort of work in conjunction. In other words, when you're thinking about writing and you haven't done a lot of writing, you think you sit down and type. And you can do that, and some people can pull that off. But the truth is, and obviously that's the important part, is getting the, as Andy says, moving the cursor to the right. But another big part of it is I think in terms of outlines, sometimes I'll just kind of work freehand, you know, just... It sounds really crazy until you actually do it, but I sometimes need to get out of a certain way of thinking, and that really kind of stokes my productivity. And for myself, things like mind maps and outlines are really, really helpful. Now, if I'm doing a mind map on the Mac, gosh, there's at least half a dozen fantastic apps for doing that. If I'm doing outlining on the Mac, I've got TextMate and Omni Outliner. But on my iPhone, I perceive that I have fewer options. That is a very long-winded way of saying there are two apps that I have found in this last week for doing outlining and mind maps, and I've looked at a lot of both kinds of apps, and I finally found two that I really like. Do you have a preference on where I start? How about I start with the mind mapping?
Okay.
For those of you who aren't familiar, this is I think the term was coined by this guy, Tony Buzan, and it's basically that notion of you start by writing, usually with markers is the best way to do this. You write something in the middle of the page, and then you just create branches. And once you kind of let yourself kind of disappear into this process, it's a tremendous way to find connections between things and to sort of figure out what you know about something. Most of you have probably tried it. And I have to say, doing it with markers on paper is far and away, like by orders of magnitude, the best way. But it's actually also really fun to do on the phone. And there's a couple pretty good apps for this. I have tried... let me find this one. I have so many applications. This is so embarrassing.
This would be good on the iPad because I think a little bit bigger screen would be nice for. My mapping tends to use the screen space pretty well.
Well, that's what's neat about this. I wish I could show it to you.
I tried mind map and OmniGraffle. That's kind of my.
I've been using NovaMind on the desktop.
NovaMind, FreeMind, they're all FreeMind. NovaMind is NovaMind and Mind Manager are both really good, but cost. FreeMind is open source, and actually, if you can stand the kind of Java swing-looking interface,
see, I don't want that.
Very powerful. Well, then let me tell you about an app for the Mac. Headspace for the iPhone. If you like want a kind of interesting interface, Headspace lets you basically move you can drag things into other things and move them around. And the distinguishing thing about Headspace is it's kind of 3D looking. Ooh. It gives you, it's pretty neat. But in the end, I went with, for the mind mapping part, I've ended up really liking this app called, it has the name of, it is an app.
These are so important. All these are so important. I know with, in my computer, you know, OmniGraffle. I think I spend more time in that than I spend.
I use OmniGraffle instead of Illustrator now.
I got to get good with OmniGraffle because I paid for the Pro much. And everything, oh and gosh. I just
you know, like nice I just think in it. Thing. I just think in it. I'm like, oh, and then I'll connect this, and then I'll do this. And
I need to. I need a little in service. Go ahead.
Let me give you a quickie on OmniGraffle. And again, I work with this. So disclosure, I do some. They're pals of mine, and I work with them. But it has a built-in outliner. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, I got to use that.
Semantic outliner. Okay. So you can outline, and then it turns into a semantic drawing as well.
See, I fired it up because I wanted to do diagram my social graph, yep. like where what goes to not the graph, but the programs, what platforms go to what so I could figure out where the loops were so I could actually get a workflow going where I tweet and then it goes to Buzz and then it goes to FriendFeed or whatever. And I thought OmniGraph would be perfect for that. But then I
guess it would almost be like a non-functional version of pipes. It would be like
Yeah.
Well, the name of the app is there's the mind mapping app called MindNode. And it's I learned about it as an iPhone app. And I mean for the folks who are watching this on the video, I can at least show you that you can go in and pinch. You can't see this. Who am I fooling?
It's too bright.
But you can pinch in and out. You run around and basically creating a new node, which is what they call one of those little branches. You just take it and grab this little plus sign.
Oh, and it drags it around?
Yeah. And then by just holding it and scooting it, you can move it into another area.
Oh, this
it
is gives pretty a basic, sweet.
It is pretty neat. It gives you a basic outline view, textual outline view that you can jump around with, but it's, you can't really do much with the outline. It's really mainly to just kind of get you somewhere quickly. But you'd be amazed if you sit there with this thing for a few minutes. You get pretty fast at it. Now
what's your use case? How do you use it?
I am at the stage with my book where I know everything I want to say and I've written a bunch of what I want to say and now I'm sort of doing the masonry of how it all fits together.
Mm-hmm. This would be perfect for that.
I write inbox zero in the middle of the page and then I create a new branch called introduction. I'm actually at that weird stage where I'm actually kind of thinking about the order of it.
Right.
And so I'll go introduction. Okay, introduction. Then branch one of introduction, Richard Scarry, Book of the Future. Branch two of introduction, why knowledge work is hard. Branch three, why email. Sub branch, three things about email and why it's hard.
You can reattach and drag around. So you have this
drag
kind of...
Drag it anywhere. Yeah. And you can pinch to zoom way in and way out. Now I have to say, again, this is going to sound crazy if you think this sounds like kind of like hippie artist stuff, but these different modes like typing versus longhand writing versus talking to people, these all really, I think, I'm not a neuroscientist, but it kind of stimulates a different part of your brain. You start thinking differently. So I love that. I can do that. Now, what's neat about that is there's a standard that I had mostly known of for RSS feeds, which is called OPML, which is something outline markup language. And basically what it does is it's just XML for outlines. So when you're done with your little, for now, when you're done with this, you can actually go fire up.
That's cool.
If you get MindNode Pro for the Mac, which is a desktop version of this, you can just pull it right over, or you can just open up the little port on your iPhone and download it as a FreeMind, OPML, Ping, or whatever, and it comes right on your Mac. So it's really great. Now that alone is great, but that's not really an outliner. And it outlining is different from mind mapping. For outlining, there is an amazing app. Well, I don't know if it's amazing. For the iPhone, it's amazing. It's nothing compared to OmniOutliner, in my opinion. But
that's the kind of the granddaddy of desktops.
Well, you know, and I can't wait to see I love this app called ZeptoLiner. Z-E-P. I didn't name it. I don't name these things. SAP NCBD Plus. I don't know where they come up with the names.
ZeptoLiner.
GumoLiner.
Yeah, GumoLiner, exactly.
Exactly. He's the one who was just in the first couple.
Yeah.
Went into management.
Poor Zeppo. Oh, it's painful. Well, he's in Animal Crackers, right? He just has like a really lame part.
Yeah. He's the Marx brother who didn't really have any talent.
No. Well. Oh. Now, ZeptoLiner, here's what I love about this. Now, and there's a special challenge, obviously, to the iPhone. And what I love about ZeptoLiner is it's pretty fast to just, what do you do with an outline? You create, you spawn new entries very quickly, and then you move them around by indent and outdent, and then you rearrange, right?
Right.
And all of those things are super easy to do in this. If you just want to make a sibling of whatever level you're at, you just hit the plus button and it creates a new one. And then you can, if you pause for a second while you're holding down an entry, you can outdent, indent, or outdent. And then it has, what do they call it? Hoisting, they call it in Omni Outliner, where you can like just see this one area. You can close up all the other ones. Also, this works with OPML, and you can pull it over to your Mac. And, you know, with OPML, basically, you can round trip between all of these apps. It's not...
That's kind of neat. So OPML can describe an outline.
That's right. Well, that's the funny part. Is it sounds like you know it like I do, which is a way to move between news readers.
Right.
But I think, I don't know if it's a Dave Weiner thing or what, but it started out basically as a way to express outlines.
I didn't know.
Because it's really just, you know, parent and child relationships and right. siblings. So anyway, I'm sorry, that's very long-winded, but if you're like me and you think in outlines, I think this is a pretty great app. And there are other good ones out there. You should look around. There are tons of them. But I found this one very easy to use. And the fact that you can pull any of this stuff, I mean, how much is this like a thing now with things like PasteBot and all these different apps where you can like kind of throw things at your Mac and back? Zepto Liner is, I don't know what it costs. Dane, what does it cost, Dane? It's something like $8 maybe?
$8.99.
And then I went ahead and bought the $19 Pro version of Mind.
Is that all it is?
Well, for the desktop app of Mind Node. Mind Node regular.
They have Mind a free version.
Yeah. Mind Node Prime is free. And yeah. Mind Node Pro is, I think, $19. And the iPhone app is...
$4.99.
But...
well, that's a pretty good... For $25, then you get a pretty good set there.
And if it helps me finish my book, it's worth everything.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I might take a look at this. I've tried all the mind mappers out there, but this one looks very clean and simple.
Well, you know what's funny, Leo? It really is. This is, boy, if there's any application where, you know, I think probably IDEs and editors have got to be up there in terms of like how it feels to you. But I mean, like there are some where you can open it and instantly know this is not for me,
right?
Regardless of the features. But I mean, some people swear by mind. I actually bought, I don't want to sound like, you know, Richie Rich or something. I bought a copy of Personal Brain just because it is.
Right.
Technologically, one of the most amazing applications. I don't find much use for it.
But this is your field, so you kind of need to.
Yeah, I can I can defend these ridiculous purchases.
Right,
but
right.
You know what's funny is with mind mapping, I got to tell you, this sounds squirrely, but go buy a giant-ass 36-pack of Pentel markers and a giant-ass piece of paper. And if you do follow Tony Buzan's actual directions for doing a mind map, you know, here, this... This is the first version of the Inbox Zero book. And you can see I did all the actual stuff with like changing the size of the different...
It's pretty in colors and everything.
There's like a whole methodology.
And, you're like Leonardo da Vinci. You write backwards. So I think that's kind of cool.
I do. Yeah, I'm also ambidextrous. You know,
wow.
I'm like book two Gershwin brothers.
Wow.
Yeah, ZeptoLiner. I'm sorry that was so long. ZeptoLiner and MindNode.
Andy in the hot call, your pick of the week.
This is a little exercise in personal humility. Because sometimes you see a product that comes out and you're like, this has got to be about the single most useless thing I've ever seen that was actually brought to marketplace. But then you realize later on that it wasn't that it was a useless product. It was because either you didn't have the imagination to really figure out how to use it and what it meant, or it was useless for its time, but then it became a totally different thing as the world sort of changed a little bit around it. And so my pick is, you'll recognize this. This is the from 10.1 Design, the Pogo Sketch stylus for the iPhone. And here's where you start off with the, this is useless. Andy, you don't need a stylus for the iPhone. It uses your
right.
God gave you
Or you can use sausage or cheese sticks.
Exactly. But there are two changes to that. Number one, in cold weather, this will work through, even if you're holding it in your gloves, these will not work until you take your gloves off. Given that I've just seen two documentaries about failed Everest missions in which the people who are survivors of the failed expeditions are like gesturing like this, and that's about as far as their hands go because their fingers got cut off because they took their gloves off in the cold. Having one of these in cold weather is probably going to be better than taking your gloves off. But the real big deal is that now that there are really, really good sketch programs for the iPhone, I found that this is one of the best $15 that I spent. You can get them at any Apple store. Because I had this little moment where last week I think I was recommending Layers as a sketch program. I've actually moved on to Autodesk's sketch program because it's a lot. I've learned how to use it better than my initial impressions of it. And I found myself I was at a little like one of those little outdoor malls where there's an Apple store over here and there's a little burger joint here. So I was sort of curious about this as chiefly as my second official iPad accessory. I bought you know, I bought my Apple wireless Bluetooth keyboard as my first iPad accessory, but I figured that this is probably going to be interesting for sketch programs on the iPad. But I found myself just like, as I was waiting for like my food to be ready, just sitting there like on my window seat and just like taking out the sketch program and just drawing what I was seeing through the window. And I was really I was surprised at how quickly I was really getting into it, because, you know, I was starting thinking, well, I never had any sort of color sense. Also, managing watercolors and managing colors is not an easy thing to do, like in the field. But it's like, okay, there's a blue sky, so let's just do the top half of the screen as blue, and the parking lot is sort of gray, so let's pick up a gray and let's start filling the gray in the bottom. And on the distance there, you see the line of stores. It's sort of a sandstone. Let's find a sandstone color that. And I kept getting into, well, okay, now let's put in the details for this bush here and this other store here and this awning, which is purple. And my burger arrived and was getting cold because I just found myself really getting into just drawing with this thing in my hand in a way that drawing with my fingertips just never really happened. And it was really a lovely little moment, because it underscored the reasons why the iPhone is one of my favorite pieces of technology, because I find that we talk often about apps that really work well for those idle moments when you just have 5 or 10 minutes and you don't need to spend 3 hours working on a game, but you do want to spend a few minutes just being distracted with something. And it turns out that the more I use my iPhone, the more I'm filling those idle moments with creativity, with creating things, doing things that I would not be doing otherwise. I will not show you screenshots of my art skills, because it's just pretty pathetic. I mean, if I hold up really, really close, you'll see that this is an absolute
it's a lighthouse.
Perfect,
it's beautiful.
It's a photorealistic, but I wish I could show you the rest of the screen, because the rest of this painting is just beautiful. I mean,
hey, Andy, in art, they call that a detail.
Detail.
Exactly.
Yeah, it zooms in on the detail.
Yeah. The Jiggly prints will be available in 30 days for $800. But the point is not that it's great art, but the point is that instead of spending like 5 or 10 minutes this morning, you know, watching TV or just, you know, doing something silly, I was just like, yeah, I synced my iPhone. The thing was like next to the stylus was next to the thing. I wanted to see if I could figure out like which app I was going to show off today. And I just find myself sketching and doodling, and then fast forward 15 minutes later. I've been using various parts of my brain that otherwise I don't normally use. So this is going to be I really do think this is going to be a very, very cool tool to have when you get your iPad. But also, you know, it's such a wonderful enhancement to any drawing app that you might have. The other thing is, but they do have two different kinds. They have the Pogo Stylus and the Pogo Sketch. The Sketch is the only one that has this pocket clip, which is absolutely essential. I think you have to agree. As it is, I was sort of disappointed that it doesn't come with a cap, because the way it works is that you get this little conductive tip, looks like sort of like
a fuzzball
cigarette, right? Yeah. And I can just imagine like having to buy a new one of these like every couple months if I'm always carrying this around with me. And I'm like, geez, you know what? For $14, you know, even an 89-cent Bic banana pen gives me a plastic clip that I can snap on the end of it to protect its 2-cent tip. So that's the only disappointment about it. But honestly, if I have as much fun with this like over the next month as I did over the past 2 or 3 days, I could definitely see myself just having a couple in the drawer and replacing them as they get worn out. It really did make my iPhone a lot more fun.
For what it's worth, theoretically, in the next 3 hours and 24 minutes, you could buy it for $13.49 and have it tomorrow from Amazon. Just
cool.
FYI.
And I think somebody might
have. I bet you that would improve Plants vs. Zombies.
It's going to come faster. It's going to come faster than your pizza at this point.
I don't know what's taking these guys so long. I'm so getting this. That is so cool, Andy.
Yeah, I want to buy one too.
I
just buy everything everybody recommends. I just go around. I'm really glad Scott's not here anymore, because I was taking a mortgage on the house.
It's getting pricey. We'll get Scott back just so that you can spend more money.
I know.
Hey, before I get to my pick, I just wanted somebody in the chat room sent me a really interesting link from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Fred Von Lohman, who's one of their attorneys there, did a legal analysis of the iPhone Developer Program License Agreement. You might say, well, wait a minute, how did he get it? Turns out NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, did an iPhone app and is required by the law of the land, when given a Freedom of Information Act request, to pony up.
Wow.
So the EFF did an FOIA request to NASA. NASA sent them a copy of the March 17th, 09 version of the iPhone agreement, and it is amazingly draconian. I mean, you couldn't get nastier. And it's well worth reading at EFF.org in their deep links section. And we'll probably talk about it next week. But, you know, it really is kind of germane to the conversation we were having about, you know, the Mac heist and the and developers and so forth. Because essentially what Apple's saying is we own you. We are the Walmart of distribution for iPhone apps. Walmart, Tower Records, Target, JCPenney's all rolled into one. And just, I mean, the things that you have to give up to be an iPhone developer, and people do because there's no other choice, are really dramatic. Ban on public statements, of course, we knew about. Applications have to be distributed in the App Store. No other way. There's a ban on reverse engineering. You cannot tinker with any Apple products, not just the iPhone, or enable others to do so.
Tinker. Is that really the language?
No, I'm sure it says you will not quote, you will not, through the use of the Apple software services or otherwise, create any application or other program that would disable, hack, or otherwise interfere with a security solution or any security digital signing, digital rights management, verification, or authentication mechanisms implemented in or by the iPhone operating system software, iPod Touch operating software, this Apple software, any services or other Apple software or technology, or enable others to do so. Apple can kill your app at any time, and they never owe you more than $50 in damages, no matter how badly they screw you.
It's like the opposite of your ATM card.
Yeah, it is.
Like where you're only ever going to get $50 worth of damage.
Yeah, that's the most.
You know, I think like your fourth iPad award should go to that run of you like reading that agreement. If someone's going to auto-tune that into a really good song.
If you do a really good job,
our liability is limited to $50.
I will give you an iPad if you do a really good job, but only as judged by Andy, Alex, and Merlin.
Well, I just look at that kind of stuff like it's the rules of the game. I mean, they're setting the rules.
When you dominate when you're a monopoly.
When you sign up, those are the rules, you know, and they're laying them out. So, and it obviously, I think the real problem Apple has is just not enough people are taking them up on that agreement. I think that agreement's scaring a lot of developers away.
Good. Well, that's why I'm glad Android exists, because there is an alternative, right? So meanwhile, let me show you an iPhone application. Ubisoft and Gameloft created this. This is a game that I loved. In fact, I played this with Henry when he was little for a long time. It's called Rayman 2, and they have taken the entire game, which was a PC game, very elaborate, and they have actually ported the whole thing to the iPhone, graphics and all. And it's really a fun game. I mean, I played hours and hours of this. It is fairly expensive. I can't remember exactly what it costs, but it's...
You mean it's more than 99 cents?
Yeah, more than 99 cents. I think it's $7 or $8. Let me turn up the sound.
Setting us back.
Yeah, but...
It's a crazy economy that we've gotten into, though, with the iPhone.
This is a French game, and so it has a very kind of weird look, but it's really a fun game. And, you know, the controls are not too bad.
It looks great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It just shows you what they're able to do on a modern iPhone platform. I mean, this was a PC game. This was a tough first-person shooter PC game. But good for the kids. I mean, you play Rayman, this cute character. You can jump and you can fireballs and stuff like that.
It really sounds like you're saying Rain Man, just for what it's worth.
R-A-Y.
Definitely
an excellent game. Excellent game. So let me jump through this hole.
10 minutes to Wapner. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Definitely. 52. There we go.
Hot water, burn, baby.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Level up.
Bandicoot crashes every time.
Definitely crashes.
About $100.
This is really a fun game. I have to say, I spent hours on this on the PC. So,
dang it.
Just shows you.
That looks like exactly the sort of game that I like.
Yeah, it's a kind of a platformer. It's not violent. It's a lot of fun. It's very quirky. Some very challenging jumping things. It's basically a first-person platformer, I would guess. Yeah.
Of course, watching this, I just go, when is someone going to port Marathon to the iPhone?
I can't believe that it could pull off those graphics.
It's really remarkable. Very fluid. Works beautifully. This is a cut scene, of course, but it does a great job. It wasn't the most challenging game, I'm sure. You know, this is a few years old. He speaks a kind of a weird French pigeon. And there's fairies. So that's good. Definitely fairies. So there you go. That's my pick of the week. Rayman 2 on the iPhone. Another great time waster for you. As if we didn't need more. I'm still doing Plants vs. Zombies like crazy. In fact, Alex and I, for those of you who tune in a little early to our broadcasts every Tuesday, live.twit.tv, Alex and I do a little masterclass in Plants vs. Zombies. So far.
Yes, we do. Just about every show, there's a little bit of a... We chat about the differing strategies.
Yeah, I show him my current level. He helps me out with the picks and so forth. It's really it's excellent for anybody who wants to become a better plant.
I'm like, that plant isn't worth $20,000.
Yeah.
I wasted a lot of money on that. Save yourself.
Yeah. I have to say, this game has a lot. This Plants vs. Zombies, if you're going to pick one game.
Don't do it.
Is it pretty easy to pick up? I mean,
the problem.
It's way too
that's
easy.
That's the problem. It's easy.
It's kind of strangely.
It's easy to pick up. Not so easy to put down.
Hard to put down. It's kind of.
I'm getting it right now.
Strangely addictive.
No, don't do it. Merlin, step away from the phone right now.
Yeah. It's that too was me with late. Look the teeth, dummy. I just
see the zombies are coming. Merlin, you got to pick your weapons here. So you got the little mushroom and the little free shooter.
Just put the needle down, Merlin.
Yeah, that's good.
Merlin, I've been there. I'm still there.
And then Alex recommends a walnut and a shooter.
All of your loved ones are outside here. We just want to talk for a few minutes about how your gaming is affecting your relationship.
Yeah, no, this
you
is
have
this
to talk.
Is,
we just want you to listen.
This is good. Here's a little balloon player.
We're
going
to do a whole podcast on Plants versus Zombies.
I forgot to put a lily pad in there. See, I need more slots. So you say live with the fog. Is that what you say?
All right, I live with the fog. I've gotten pretty good at it.
Yes, Andy?
I found that the thing was a crutch.
you forgot to sign off the show.
Oh, golly. Maybe I should end the show.
This weekend, Plants vs. Zombies is Twibs. Twibs.
Twibs. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for being here. We thank you, especially Andy Iannacco, for suffering through the Skype madness, the insanity to get here. It wasn't easy, but Andy did it. Worse than a snowstorm.
That wall needed a hole in it anyway.
Andy writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, catches great work there, and of course on his website, CWOB.com. Thank you for being here, Andy. We'll see you next week. Merlin Mann. You are the man, Merlin Mann. The pizza come? The pizza came, didn't it?
He's gone.
The pizza came.
Pizza's here.
Merlin Mann is at 43folders.com, also the host of the very, very funny and well worth downloading and subscribing to. You look nice today. Hello, Merlin. Was that your pizza?
Hi. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just here looking over some pamphlets. God, that pizza guy was kind of a jerk.
Was he?
Yeah.
Did you say, hey, I'm on the air right now? Can you just be quiet?
You know, that would make me sound certifiably insane.
could you deliver my pizza faster? Because I'm on an internet radio show.
43folders.com.
I'm sorry, Leo. That was selfish and it was wrong.
Show me the pizza.
You want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on.
It's a meat buster. What did he say? It's a little meaty.
That's what he said.
He says it's a little meaty.
That's the word.
Okay. It's a little meaty, ladies and gentlemen. Here it is. Boy, that's...
Are you ready?
Okay.
Oh, brother. Look at this. Oh, look at this.
Oh, man. The meat lover's special. Linguiça.
Linguiça. Yeah. That's from Portugal.
You know what? I've been inspired, Merlin, because oftentimes I buy things like during the show that have been recommended during these Picks of the Week segments. For counting purposes, I'm going to say that was one of your Picks of the Week, which allows me to buy myself a pizza for dinner.
It is. Merlin's pick.
Based on Merlin's recommendation.
Yes, Linguiça.
And it's only like 1/120th of an Alex.
That's a good deal. That's $14. That's good.
$14.
You rescued me from reheated beans and rice from yesterday. It was my Tuesday night plan.
You know, Andy, I've been a fan of yours forever, and I just care about the Mac community. So maybe everybody go get a pizza.
He's a giver. He's a, you know, with the love and the thing. It kills me that no one ever knows about the work you do for your many charitable causes. And
if this telethon can have two different points to it.
Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com, to join that 3D group of multimedia artists and learn as well as work. He also does podcasts, a bunch of them, including This Week in Photography from PMA at pixelcorps.tv.
We got a lot of good response. We're starting to get the hang of covering these events. So between the Mac Break video and PMA, PMA is a new... people should check it out. PMA is a slightly different approach where we added... 2 or 3 segments per, rather than sending out...
Not one, one, one,
we,
one.
We recorded 27 episodes in about 3 hours. And so we were like, you know, let's not put them all out. You know, so we clumped them together into some groups that make sense. So we'd love to hear what people think of it. So go up to download This Week in Photography, and then go to Twip Log and tell us what you think.
I'll be at South by Southwest this week. Ooh. I'm really excited about that. Merlin, are you going this year?
I'll be in mind node trying to finish my book.
Oh, so sorry.
No, you guys go have fun. You know, I think you got to have a bye year. They call it a rebuilding year.
It's your bye year.
It's my bye year. I hope you guys have fun.
It makes me sad because it's my first year. I've never been there.
And none of us are there.
And none of you are going. But I'm going to be there, and I have a Gandalf cane, a staff, with attached to it a camera, a light, a microphone. I have on my back a live streaming.
Are you just the weekend, or is it?
I'm going Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. I will be broadcasting until the batteries die. Right. We're going to do the live Dignation thing, and I'm going to nerd surf. Kevin Rose has invited me to come up on the stage during Dignation on Saturday night, and he says, we're going to crowd surf. I said, what do you mean crowd surf? You mean like Iggy Pop, Roll on Glass? What are you talking about? He says, yeah. Merlin?
Right here, Kevin. No, I'm listening. You're going to crowd surf. Like Iggy Pop. Crowd surf, Iggy Pop, Broken Glass.
Am I boring you?
No.
If I had a piece of pizza down there on the floor, I'd be doing the same thing. Exactly the same thing.
Kevin Rose, he's done some great work.
Anyway, so I'm going to have my Merlin staff. So it will be a very interesting, different kind of coverage, right. All live. We're going to do cut downs on our specials channel. Yeah. There is a new Twit specials channel in iTunes, so subscribe to that. So one channel. Because we're going to start doing a lot of live stuff. We're going to do DragonCon in September. I just agreed to do Lou Webb in Paris.
We did a test with the new box yesterday.
The live stream.
Are you taking that down?
Yeah, that's going to be incredible.
Gosh, it was so awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And with great quality.
Are you saying that I now have a tax-deductible reason to go to DragonCon?
Yes, you do, sir. To join us for our live coverage from Atlanta, Georgia, Labor Day weekend.
I'm just thinking about that picture I saw from Dragon Con 2 years ago with the 40 slave Leias having a pillow fight.
Slave Leia and Leo all together in one.
Slave, no, no, no. You've got to do that now. Slave Leo.
Slave
that's
Leo.
That's a picture.
That's me. I'm Slave Leo with the brass bra and the ponytail.
Hello, retweet. merchandising my son.
No, we realize that one of the things we really do well, in fact, is live coverage of these kinds of events. So we're building this technology so that we can do it, and we're going to do more and more of these events. Le Web, I just agreed with Loic to go to Paris in December and cover Le Web with Twit. We'll be doing Dragon Con. We'll be doing, we're going to try in June, they're doing a Maker Faire in Detroit. Is it June or July? We're going to try to cover that in Detroit. I think that'll be really, really fun.
And the Maker Faire here is in May, right?
Yeah, in San Mateo, but that's too easy.
Yeah, it's too easy.
I want to go to Detroit.
And you want to junk it.
I want to junk it. It's all about the junkets, baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have great, by the way, great Greek food in Detroit.
Mm. Yes.
I'm just saying.
Mm. I'll eat a souvlaki.
State Theater is great there.
State Theater?
If there's anyone playing, I saw some bands at State Theater. It's great theater.
So I think we've really driven this entire show deep into the ground.
Let's just start over, Leo.
Can we just do it again? I think it wasn't,
start over.
It wasn't quite the
really
way
felt
I wanted
like
it.
Really,
stupid Skype, gosh darn it, concerner, because swaggle, stupid Skype.
Steve Jobs.
Apple. Andy started prospector cursing.
iPhone.
never
stuck by a dead bee. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it, and I know you've wasted a good hour and a half of your life, and you'll never get it back, but hey.
You weren't going
to
get it back.
I hope you're doing something else to make it worth it.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Get back to work. Anybody want some pizza? Break time is over!